fine. So, anyways, we'll learn the Elohim Nishmat. Oh, yeah. Okay. So yesterday we looked at all the Shitot that focus in one way or another on the rationale for accepting Mishnah and Gemara as being acceptance. Formal acceptance like the Smag, less formal acceptance, and the problems. And we noted that according to Meiri, acceptance means acceptance except when we didn't. Right? Of course, Meiri himself applies that to the Mishnah. He doesn't tell us whether the same is true of the Gemara. You know, probably not usually. Though admittedly, there are times, I didn't include this on the sources, where certain poskim really do feel like Bishanat Chak, at least, you know, under extenuating circumstances, we could theoretically overturn what seems to be the Sock of the Gemara in favor of a different Shita in the Mishnah. You know, these are minor postgame. People like the Taz on Shulchan Aruch and Ramosh Feinstein and things like that. Nothing that you actually do except things that you actually do all the time. You know, this is, for example, the Taz's justification of why most of you, I assume, are not Machbid on Chadash in Chutzlaretz. You have any of your Machbid on Chadash? Yeah, exactly. You know, there's an... Is there, yes, right, where the Torah says... Right, the Torah says you can't have old, right, new grain, meaning grain, the right, took root after the Omer, and we did this last year, right? So I don't know if you remember this, when we did the Taz, right, that the Taz says, well, then how is it that in Chutzlaretz people are not Machbid? How many of you check whether you're having winter wheat or spring wheat?
Because the wheat didn't
sell us. Yeah, no, it doesn't. Most of it in America these days is not Yashan. And there are different answers given. The answer given by the Taz is, well, it's a machloket in the Mishnah. Whether Chadash applies in Chutzlaretz, and even the Gemara clearly says it does, right? Midaraisa, whatever, maybe we pop in like the other Shita.
I just heard
the
stuff
greater
than that's more of a justification.
Well, that might be the case, but his justification is that we're going to overturn the Gemara's stock and go back to the Mishnah. So you do get this stuff Povisham. The Torah says you can't have new grain, meaning grain that took root after the Omer, right, until the next Omer. The question is, to Machlok in the Mishnah, whether that applies in Chutzlaretz as well as in Eretz Yisrael. Right? In Chutzlaretz, in Eretz Yisrael, it definitely applies. Right? That's why here, everything that has the Hechsher of any Israeli Hechsher is all Yashan Vadai. All of it. What? America is right. In America, the problem is right. Is we have multiple wheat seasons. Yeah, grain seasons. Yeah, that's the issue. Yeah. That's what it is. Meaning it's an extenuating circumstance because you know what? Well, how else are you gonna eat Entenmann's? You know, it's a real problem. What? There you go, right? Yeah. Yeah, meaning it's most of the agricultural laws don't apply in Chutzlaretz. Well, because the pasuk only in many of these cases says ba'aretzecha, right, in your land, which usually means Israel, right? Chadash is a weird one, right? Anyways. If you want, we can go back through that if Gavi doesn't care to do a quick chazar on it. Maybe Likrat Shavuot. Oh, right, you weren't here. Right.
I was here just at the beginning.
And then we like split it. Okay, so maybe we'll do it. Just because like it's a you know it is the Omer. It's the time to do it. You were here. I don't remember who was here, who wasn't here. The end of last year was chaos. Yes, fine. But
you were being sarcastic about the
Shabbat,
right?
What?
You were being sarcastic about the
Shabbat. No, I was not. I mean, the Entenmann's I was being sarcastic. But let's not do that now. I'm just pointing this out. Okay, we can come back to it. But if it's not about acceptance, then what is it? So the Chazon Ish, if you remember, we left off with the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish had said, Wait a second, it's acceptance. Why don't we just not accept it? So, the Chazon Ish comes up with a different theory. I will let Yaakov tell me the Chazon Ish's theory, because it was the one that he said, what is the upshot of the whole shir going to be? Yiridat HaDorot, right? What is Yiridat? What is Yiridat HaDorot, Yaakov? Yes, there is a theory that does appear in the Gemara in certain places, but it, you know, has also contradictory ones, and that's why you've got to sort of figure out the holistic picture, which is what Schneer Lyman did in an excellent article years ago, called Midgets on the Shoulders of Giants. But there is this theory that becomes popular in certain circles that the single thing that explains all of history is Yiridat HaDorot, is the earlier generations were better, and since then, we have been getting worse. You know, I've heard different versions of it. There's the, you know, what? Yeah, of course, this is also like, you know, sometimes you'll hear it in the context of why evolution is obviously wrong, because, you know, the Goyim believe that we came from monkeys, and that's why they have no respect for their elders, because their parents are closer to the monkeys, right? But we believe to respect our parents because we're closer to Sinai or something like this, right? Right, I earlier in the week in Parsha, and I really do hold to this, the Midrash in this week's Parsha has the following comment, right, which is why, it appears elsewhere, but it also appears in this week's Parsha. Why were human beings created last, right, in creation? So the Midrash says, if you're Zoche, right, if you end up being a Tzaddik, so then the theological reason we give to that fact is that all of creation was prepared for you. And if you're not Zoche, then we can tell the person, no, that you came after even the gnat, and even after the mosquito, and even after the worm. Right? Meaning Chazal are basically saying that, right, the fact you created last doesn't have a necessary moral implication. It's what you make of it. So the modern version I would write of it is, why are human beings evolved from apes? So that if you're Zoche, you can say that you were the pinnacle of creation. And if you're not Zoche, you can say you're just a monkey. Right? That's the modern version of that Midrash. So I don't know why it's not frum to say that evolution is true. You can do literally what Chazal do to that, and right, and say it all depends on what you make of it. But okay, close parentheses. But yes, there is this theory that floats around called Yiridat HaDorot. The Chazon Ish, more or less, yes, basically he says, the reason that we can't turn over the Bavli is because the reason that we accepted the Bavli is not because we accepted it, but because you are a mouse, they are, or to quote the language of the Gemara, right, im harishonim kimalachim, if the early ones were angels, anu kivnei Adam, then we are people. Vim harishonim kivnei Adam, if the earlier ones were human beings, anu kichamorim, then we are donkeys. V'lo kichamoro shel Pinchas ben Yair, and not like special donkeys, right? Yes, right, Clapper once pointed out to me that if you don't think that Gemara is meant to be humorous, then you obviously haven't said it out loud and listened to the words coming out of your mouth. Right? Obviously, it's like Musser with a little bit of a humor, because then it goes on to tell you a story about the special donkey, right? What? Yes, yes. But the Chazon Ish number 9 says, Ha'emet, what's the truth? One second. Ha'emet bazeh, shedor sh'achar ha-Mishnah. Why did the Gemara accept the Mishnah? Because the generation after the Mishnah saw, ra'u et miyut ha-livavot neged bali ha-Mishnah. They saw, they perceived, that what? Their hearts were not as great. V'yadu lavetach, and therefore knew with certitude, sh'hamet le'olam le'marishonim, that the truth is always with the early ones. V'acharei sheyadu amitat hadavar she'i efshar sheyasigu heim ha'emet mashlo esig echad min ha'tanaim. And once they realized that they could never understand the truth as much as the Mishnah, Lo ayu rashaim lachlok. They realized they could no longer argue. Ve'ave rak shonim kol divrei tanaim shekadamum. And they only learned what the tanaim said. Ve'gam echatimar ha-talmud. And the same thing happened after the Gemara. Batlu divrei omarash amar machman alamat divrei betana. Uvezeh shekadav maran tekiblu kein. And that which the Kesemidra said they accepted it. Lo tovava chesed al suam erishonim. This wasn't a favor that they accepted their words. Ela ha'emet chievotam. The truth bound them. Ki eich na'aseh al da'atenu. Im yadanu shada'atenu k'tara ve'emet einidanu. How could we follow our own opinions if we know that we don't have the truth? They realized that afterwards no more truth would be introduced to the world. And therefore, the Chazon Ish says, why do we accept the Gemara? Because they are smarter than us, truer than us, and we can't perceive their unfathomable will, their knowledge of truth. The Chazon Ish, one second, Rami, one more second. The Chazon Ish elsewhere has a variant formulation where he says that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Tet, says that the world is divided into three epochs. Alpai Sheshet Alafim Hevei Olam. The world will last for 6,000 years. Alpayim Tohu, 2,000 years of nothingness. Alpayim Torah, 2,000 years of Torah. The Alpayim Yimod HaMashiach. 2,000 years are defined as the days of the Mashiach. Don't ask me what any of that means. But what the Chazon Ish there says is, God ordained that the middle 2,000 years of history would be the only years in which you could create Torah. After that, you only interpret it. And Chazal, more or less, the closing of the period of Chazal, more or less coincides with the closing of the Alpayim Torah. So the Chazon Ish is these two formulations. One is we accept the Mishnah and the Gemara because we always accept truth, and they're smarter than us and know the truth more than we do, and we just realize that, and therefore we never argue. It's not about acceptance. It's about a realization that they are always right. Plus, what goes along with that is that that is the period in which the Torah and the ability to create new Torah was closed. After that, it's only interpretive. Yes, Rami.
So I have a question that part of the people set up.
Oh, no.
Okay. So
yes, Rami.
Because of the, was like lived around the 1800s, right?
No. Chazon Ish lived in mid-20th century Israel.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, he started in Europe, but most of his authority came when he lived in Israel. He was the father of Haredi Judaism in, the deals that he made with Ben-Gurion.
Okay.
So, only off by a century and a half, but sure.
Okay, fine.
He writes in modern Hebrew, not in Yeshivish, mostly.
So, and the year he lived around the 13th century, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So, why do you hold
him? Yes, I understand. He's also arguing on the Ketzer Mishnah, essentially. Yes, you're right. Okay, I will throw out there that the Chazon Ish, for all that he says this is not how he lives his life. In his Klalei Psak, he also says, you can't argue on the Rishonim. You, even if it's a Machlokes Shach and Taz, there are rules that you have to follow. You must always follow the Shach. But if you ever read the Chazon Ish is like, this is what I think the Gemara means, and he like erases all the Rishonim. So yes, the Chazon Ish is a bit of an enigma. Yes. I don't know what to tell you. This is his programmatic statement. The fact that he didn't necessarily follow this in practice is not my problem. It's his, right? And admittedly, if you ask me, I would tell you that in Hanani, the Chazon Ish really was that smart, right? I have no problem with Chazon Ish arguing on the Rishonim, because when you read the Chazon Ish, you're like, yes, you are that awesomely smart. So if you want your own opinion with the Rishonim, it is all up to you. So he believed that the reason we listen to Gemara and whatever is because you use Hadaros, he just, I don't know, with an exception to the rule, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I have no idea what to tell you. But I understand the question.
Interesting.
I don't know what to tell you. The Meiri is just the coolest person ever. right? And, you know, that's just a statement of fact. How that affects other cousins related to him, I don't know, right? He didn't love the Miri, because, you know, because we found manuscripts and whatever, he didn't like manuscripts and things like that. Miri is the coolest person ever. I don't know what you want from my life, right? The Miri was a... The Miri was just a very futuristic thinker, okay?
Not just that, but it's like,
I don't know what you want from my life. I don't even know if he knew about this Miri, you know? Miri's just cool. The Miri predicted cloning in the 13th century, I don't even know.
He did?
Yes. The Miri has a comment in Sanhedrin, the 7th Perek, commenting on the halachot of magic, where he says that anything that can be done through science is not prohibited because of magic. For example, as we all, he says, Yadua al piderech hateva, it is known that through science, we can create human beings without the procreative act. He's like, this is known that we will be able to do this. And that will not be usher because it is science. Yes, he wrote this 700 years ago. I have no idea. I don't know what science they were doing in Provence. I don't know how he knew. I don't know. Maybe it's just cool. So.
I thought he was the foremost authority on cloning.
Oh, he is always quoted in the cloning discussion. Always. Always. No, if you read any of the cloning articles in Halakha, they always are like, well, the Meiri writing 700 years ago apparently knew that this was okay. You know? Not everyone agrees with him. Meiri is just cool. I don't know what you want from us. Yes, the Meiri said things that were radical. The Chazanish probably didn't buy how the Chazanish gets around it if he thinks everyone who lives earlier than him is right. I don't know. He didn't like the Meiri. I don't know. He didn't.
Probably because not everyone agrees with the Meiri.
No, obviously. Obviously the answer is he's going to think that everyone agrees with the Meiri. Fine. Good. So that's model two, right? So model one is variations on the acceptance theory. Model two is we accept the Mishnah because they're smarter and they knew the Torah better. We accept the Bavli because they knew the Torah better. Yerida Adora, we can never get as close to truth as they can deal with it. Now, if you remember where we left off yesterday, which is the Chazanish wrote a letter to Rav Elchanan Wasserman, and he said, Rav Elchanan, you think it's about acceptance? So you mean that if we decide not to accept the Gemara, that we can do that? And what did Rav Elchanan write back to him? Well, even better than that, he said, I read my whole book again, and I don't know where you saw that I said this. Admittedly, I know where the Chazanish saw where he said it. I read the same piece. That's what I thought also, right? In fact, the Meiri basically said this is what happened between the Gemara and the Mishnah, right? Okay, good. So Rav Elchanan, now, admittedly, Rav Elchanan would never actually say this, because do you know anything about Rav Elchanan, that is not the way Rav Elchanan works. Rav Elchanan was a shtickle more conservative than that, right? So obviously he wouldn't agree with that radical conclusion. You can't imagine. Like, that is indeed a radical thesis. Rav Elchanan was not exactly the father of, like, radical modernist theses. That's not what Rav Elchanan did, you know? He just did. You read his letters, it's quite clear he wasn't going to buy that. You know, he was a good Litvak and he hated any like hint of modernishness, right? Like, you know, his letter about his feelings on YU is, Yes. Remember that YU is the oldest yeshiva in America. Right? It opened in the 1880s or 1890s, right?
Wait, isn't it like
the Rabbinic
program
called Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, right? Okay, Rav Elchanan, when he came to America, you know, before the war, mm-hmm. before World War II, right? Rav Elchanan apparently said at the time there were two main yeshivas in America. YU, right? Yeshivas Chabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, right? No. And Torah Vadas. And apparently his description was, there are two yeshivas in America. One is a treifa yeshiva with a kosher name, and one is a kosher yeshiva with a treif name. Right?
What
Torah Vidas, he thought, was a treif name, because it's only Torah, Kulo Torah, right? That's very treif, but at least it's a kasher yeshiva. And yeshiva's Rabbeinu Yitzchok Elchanan, then it's very frum, but was a treif yeshiva, right? It was very ironic to me, because when I was in YU, one of the people who was in smicha with me was Rav Elchanan's grandson, great-grandson, and he said that every single one of Rav Elchanan's grandsons, grandchildren, or great-grandchildren, no, is not from, and the only one who is from is a YU Musmach, right? But yeah, Rav Elchanan was not, Rav Elchanan was like, you know, Moetzes Gedolei HaTorah, Agudah, he wasn't exactly the type of person that you expect to say, yes! Let's just change our mind and not accept the Bavli. So you can imagine that when the Chazon Ish called him on it, he said, I didn't hear it. Now, how does he get around the fact that the logical extension of saying that the only reason we accept the Bavli is because we accepted it? That isn't what he said. So he comes up with a very fancy schmancy argument. So what does he say in this letter? Okay, so let's read the letter, because I wanted to get you in sort of a headspace, because you realize that the thesis that he said easily does lead to the Chazon Ish's conclusion, but Rav Elchanan is not the person who's going to endorse that, right? YU was too radical for him, you know, the thesis that we can choose to overturn the Bavli was not going to go, that's not going to, you know.
No.
So what does he say? So he quotes the Chazon Ish, this is the Tshuvat Mara, right? Maran Hagon Rav Elchanan Wasserman, Zatzal Rav Elchanan Bunim Wasserman, I think that's the best. He says, look 5 lines down. Davar Pashut Hu Afilu Litinokot. It is obvious even to babies. Ki Lachlok Al Chacham Gadol Iefshar. It is impossible to argue on a Chacham unless Bilti Emacholek Hu Bar Hachi. Unless you are, what's Bar Hachi? Worthy. Worthy. Ubar plugte shel hakodem. Ki harei tzarich la'amod al sav daita. Why is it obvious? Because in order to argue, you need to understand somebody.
How are you branded with said worthy?
What?
How are you branded with
said worthy? 1 second. Because you can't, if you're not worthy, you don't understand them, right? That would be like me saying, I think that Einstein was wrong about whatever. I would have to understand what Einstein said enough that I could even argue, right? Not happening, right? Not happening. So he says, that's as obvious. If you're just not smart enough, then you can't argue. That's obvious. This is not like a halachic principle for him. This is just like straight logic. If you had understood his reason, point one. Point two. Davar pashut gamkein ki ha'amoraim lo egiu legodel madrigata tanaim chachmei ha'mishna v'abraita. It is obvious that the Amoraim didn't reach the level of the Tanaim. V'cheinu b'chol ha'darot ki ha'achronim lo egiu lemadrigata rishonim. And the Rishonim, the Acharonim, right, the earlier generations, the later generations didn't reach the level of the Rishonim. Valkein lo yuchal amor alach lokal atanakein obar plukdei. And therefore, you can't argue because you have no right to argue. Okay. Now, can someone please explain to me, so what is the second factor that Rav Elchanan introduces to explain why the Gemara didn't argue in the Mishnah, we don't argue in the Gemara? Yeah, they weren't smart enough. So now, can someone explain to me? And then he says, "Va'avshem avur baRambam." And even though the Rambam says "Shebeitin katan yachol achok ala gadol," even though the Rambam says that in principle a lesser court can argue on a greater court, al kachach shachlomar danu dafk zloim erchak b'matregan zemizay yoter midai boven muflag. That's only if the difference between their intelligence isn't that great. Because if it's so great, you just can't argue. Now, just until there, what is the difference between, right, what has he just introduced? How is this different in the Chazon Ish? How does he think it's different in the Chazon Ish?
He has a bunch of other requirements. Technically, if during the period of time where I was smart,
right, so Right? What he does is he says, look, the Chazon Ish thinks the reason the Gemara couldn't argue the Mishnah, we can't argue the Gemara, is simply they had more access to truth, objectively speaking. Rav Elchanan said it was about acceptance. The problem is, well, how is that, then why can't we argue? So Rav Elchanan adds a second factor, which is, in order to argue, you need to be within shooting distance of the person you're arguing about, not because it's like some magic, right, that they had greater access to truth or whatever, it's just that you can't argue with someone who's so much smarter than you that you can't even perceive their arguments. Now, how is that different than the Chazon Ish?
Oh,
yes, Ezra?
Yeah,
right. So, yeah, maybe something like that, right? It's a bit problematic here. So, but how, what is it, so what's really the difference? What's the difference? And here's the difference. Is that Rav Elchanan, up till now I would have just said that, okay, Rav Elchanan has basically capitulated and moved back 90% towards the Chazon Ish, right? It's because it's two factors. It's acceptance plus the fact that we're not as great. Maybe the Chazon Ish thinks it's like some objective access to truth because they're closer to Sinai or something, right? Rather than just a pragmatic description that you can't argue with people who are smarter than you, right? But by the end, right, the it sounds like the distance between the Chazon Ish and Rav Elchanan has been narrow. But then Rav Elchanan tells you what the real difference is between him and the Chazon Ish. And what is it, Yaakov?
Some people are smart enough.
Very good. Rav Elchanan says this is not, the Chazon Ish says this like objectively. The Mishnah is automatically had more access to truth than the Gemara. And the Gemara has more access to truth than we do. The Rav Elchanan says, no. I think it's primarily about acceptance. The second factor is, obviously to argue with someone, not for formal reasons, but for pragmatic, logical reasons, you can't argue with someone you don't understand, right? It's the reason that I just don't right? I don't argue with Einstein on science, and I, you know, whatever. I'm not in the same league.
Well, you're allowed to
sign with somebody. Okay. But he takes a slightly different direction. He says, but if he's arguing not from like some formal principle that the earlier ones had more access to truth, right? But rather,
there's a literal difference.
Correct. And it's just like logical that I wouldn't argue with Einstein. So Ravashi didn't argue with, not our Ravashi, right? Like Ravashi, like in Gemara, right? Didn't argue with Hillel, right? Or something. But he says, he clarifies the difference between the Chazon Ish and Bet. He says, "Aval be'emet, ein klal, b'li yotzei min haklal." There is no rule without an exception. D'ha'yadua u'muskam gam b'dor sh'achar chadim, and alash ha'chacham ha'dor ha'achronim lo egiu, af l'karsuli ha'dor rishonim. He said, it's true. The average, and maybe even the exceptional scholars, after the Gemara didn't reach the level of the Gemara. Mikol makom yaduim gam yotim etzklal. But there were some who did. There were some who did. Kimo she'idu arishonim zal rebbeinu haigon. She'agot al gaonim. Like Rav Haigon, that people felt, even though he was part of the gaonim, he was like, might as well have been an amora. Afshe ha'achron lemizman. V'chen yadua mashamar agrach mivaloshin al rabo agra. Just like Rav Chaim Voloshin used to say about the Gra'a, that he was easily as great as the Ramban or the Rashba. And therefore the Gra was greater than many generations before him. And he says, since he, unlike the Chazon Ish, right, his second factor is not identical to the Chazon Ish. He's saying the Chazon Ish thinks it's like some objective thing, that earlier generations automatically have more access to truth. He says, I'm not saying this as some objective rule. I'm saying descriptively. Descriptively. Most people later on are not as great as the people before them. Descriptively. But he says, I'm not saying this is some metaphysical rule. He says, if that's the case, then that's what acceptance comes to do. Right? What he says is, look, 90% of the time, the reason that I can't argue with the Gemara is simply because Ravina and Ravashi were smarter than me. so much smarter than me that I just have to accept that what they said is right. The acceptance svara for him, for Rav Chanan, is coming to explain why the gruz of this world can't argue on the Gemara. Right? Because he says, look, he says, one second, he says, because if it was only for the reason that we don't argue because descriptively they're smarter than us, so then the door would only mostly be closed against arguing on the Gemara, but not fully. Because there could have been one in a thousand of the Amoraim who everyone agreed was smart enough to argue on the Tanaim. And the Gemara sounds like it's not just 90% of the time you can't argue on the Mishnah, but 100% of the time. He said acceptance comes just to close the 10% gap, or 1% gap. Right? So he says, the Chazon Ish thinks it's formal, that the earlier generations had more access to truth, so later generations can't argue. He says, that's not what I think. He says, 90% of the time, I think the reason that we can't argue on the Gemara and the Gemara can argue on the Mishnah was because, descriptively speaking, they just weren't up to it. Acceptance comes to explain not why you and me can't argue on the Gemara, but why the Gra couldn't argue on the Gemara. That's it. Right? That's it. That's all the Kesef Mishnah wanted to know. Obviously, the Kesef Mishnah knew that you can't argue about people who came before you if you're not in their league. That's not enough to close the door fully. And for that, the Kesef Mishnah said, acceptance. Ulukotzer da'ati, enum even teretz gaz mishnah, enum even da'at gaz mishnah, vazem ma'inin and kabbalah lakan, zav mishum neder adin Allah, kamoshar kabbalah shamitzvah. Right? And he says, but I don't really understand the Kesef Mishnah, because mere acceptance shouldn't close the 10%, so therefore what does Rav Chanan say? He sides with who?
The smog.
The smog, essentially, yes. That there must have been a formal acceptance, a vote. And a vote is enough to close off the 10% door. Okay? So let's just review what we have, and then I'll take questions. Okay? So what do we have? We have the Kesef Mishnah and probably the Rif, right, who say that why do we accept, why does the Gemara accept the Mishnah, why do we accept the Gemara? Acceptance, informal acceptance. Right? Why then can't we argue with the, why can't we renege on the acceptance? So either you think that, well, I don't know, we did it the Mamad Kol Kal Yisrael, so you can't renege on such an acceptance, possibility one. Possibility two, which is, emerges from the Me'iri, which is?
You could,
right? Meaning, the Me'iri basically takes the logic to its extreme, which is, yeah, we accepted it, except when we didn't. He doesn't spell out whether the same is true post Talmud. He only says that's true from Gemara to Mishnah, right? But in theory, you could say that the same thing is true post Gemara, right? Third way of doing it is to say it's acceptance, but it's formal acceptance. That is the smach. And therefore, in order to, you could argue with Gemara theoretically if you do what?
Sorry.
Reconvene a new Sanhedrin with all of the rabbis in all of Israel to overturn the Gemara, right? Possibility three.
Possibility one
is just informal acceptance.
Right, then what do you mean?
So either the answer is maybe you can, based on the Me'iri, or we can't, but I don't know why. Okay? Or you say, no, it's the smog, which is formal acceptance, which is Rav Chanan. Right? Then you have the Chazon Ish who says, no, the reason we accept the Gemara is not because acceptance, ma'pidom, then you should be able to overturn it. What's his answer? formally, the earlier generations had more access to truth. And the reason you hold of the Gemara and the Mishnah is because it's truer than anything you could come up with. Rav Elchanan says, no, he has a hybrid. 90% of the reason that you can't argue on the Gemara is what?
Truth.
Not truth.
Knowledge.
Knowledge. Right? It's not like a formal access to truth. It's a descriptive recognition they're smarter than you. Acceptance is only needed to close the 10% gap, which is, why can't the Vilna Gaons of this world argue because they're the exceptions to all rules? To that, he answers, acceptance. But which type of acceptance? Smog. Formal. So he thinks that you need two factors. The reason that for the most part we don't argue the Gemara is because they were just better at getting to the truth. What about the gap for those of us who are so smart that we're smarter than Rabbi Akiva, right? Formal acceptance. I don't know. He probably thinks it's less than 10%. He says it's less than 1 in 1,000. Correct. He says 90% of the reason, 99% of the reason, 99.9. Okay, I'll use his actual numbers, which is 1 in 1,000. The 99.9% of us, right, of the Chachamim. Right, 99% of the Chachamim. 99% of the Chachamim. The reason that they don't argue in the Gemara is because they just realize they're not smart enough. The only question is what closes the gap in the 0.1% of cases. And for that, he imagines, like, the smog is a formal vote. I have no idea. I don't know. Maybe he thinks that that's not a good enough explanation. Maybe he feels like that's weird, meaning, why would we ever have taken a formal acceptance if, in principle, we should argue on everything?
And
therefore, I don't know. I can't get into Elchanan's head. It could be that it's just his conservatism driving him, right? I don't know. What? Because it's only up to the Gemara. We don't have it post-Gemara. And therefore, Lemaisa, yes, the Gra could argue on everything post-Talmud,
okay.
Which he does.
And then,
let me just spell out Rav Elchanan, right? So according to Rav Elchanan, that would mean probably that for the most part, Achronim can't argue on Rishonim, but the Vilna Gaons of this world can argue on Rishonim.
Okay.
But the Vilna Gaons of this world, while they can argue on Rishonim, even though most later people can't argue on the earlier people, that's not a principled statement, that's just a descriptive reality. But that window isn't open to the Gemara, because the formal acceptance closed that window. But everything post-Gemara for Elchanan, the Vilna Gaons of this world could argue. Right? That's what emerges from Elchanan.
Okay.
Yes?
Well, so does that mean that for literally... Okay. So then when a post-Talmudic medicinal...
Let's leave medicine on the side. For a minute?
Okay.
For a minute? Can I leave it on the side for a minute?
Okay. What did you say?
I don't know. I honestly have no idea what it means. Does he mean better knowledge of Torah, better analysis? I don't know, and I don't know why he thinks they're smarter than us. He just takes it as a given they are. I don't know. He doesn't say.
Okay.
He just takes it as obvious that all ways relevant, they were smarter than us. I don't know. Correct. Because post-Gemara, anything post-Gemara, there isn't a formal acceptance. So therefore, the Yechidei Sgula, right, the unique people, like the Gra, could indeed argue on anyone post-Gemara. The Rambam, the Ramban, the Rajba, whatever. Right? But the Gemara, because of that added formal acceptance, that closes off that window.
Yeah.
Right? That's how we understand them. Okay? Okay. Now, by the way, so far all we've seen is Bavli. We still have to deal with Yerushalmi. Well, hopefully I'll get time to do it, hopefully. But if not, I want to show you one more theory. And this is from a very fascinating thinker. The Dor Revi'i. The Dor Revi'i. Why is... That's an interesting name for a book. Why would someone call his name the Dor Revi'i? What does the Dor Revi'i mean? Fourth generation. Okay. Why is he called the Doravi? Did anyone bother looking it up? No.
Because he's the fourth generation of something.
Of something. Very good. Of what? Chatam Sofer. He's the fourth generation of the Chatam Sofer. Now, this bothers a lot of people because the Chatam Sofer is literally the father of Haredi Judaism. Literally. That's what he did. He invented it. No. No. He's not that long ago. Chatam Sofer was over 200 years ago. No, Chazon Ish 20th century. Chatam Sofer was the father of Haredi Judaism, right? Not modern Haredi Judaism, like Haredi Judaism. Like he invented it in Hungary, right? Like the modern, basically modern Haredi movement begins in Hungary, right? As a response to reform. No. Like he is he was the force behind it, okay? Reform. Well, more than that. Not just reform. Also, what became to known as modern Orthodox, but then was called Neo-Orthodox or something, or Neologs, and, well, Neologs were more not, whatever. Any, that whole, right, the main, like, the big movements were like, right, there were two, like, main schools of thought. There were many, but let's take two main schools of thought responding to reform, right? There was the German school, right, which basically said, we can accept certain things from modernity, like how to dress, what language to speak, things that are, you know, superficial, and maybe even get an academic, right, exposure to academia, right? That was what happened in Germany, right? Those are people like Rav Hirsch, Rav Hildesheimer, right? This is like the pre-modern Orthodox, right? And then there were the people who said, no, what we need to do is Chadash Aser Minat Torah, right? Anything new is Aser. That was the Hungarian response, right? They had a very insulting name for the Germans, right? What is the what is the Jewish nickname for German Jews?
Yekke.
Do you ever wonder why? Do you know what Yekke means?
No,
it means a jacket. Jacket. It means a short jacket, because they made fun of them because they were the people who changed their clothes and wore short jackets rather than kapotas. Well, it originally was. I think they've taken it as a pride. But originally, right? Yes. So he's the father of that, okay? His fourth generation descendant, Rav Shmuel David Glasner, is not quite as anti-modern as the Chatam Sofer, as evidenced by the fact, A, he was a Zionist, B, his Hagdama to his Perush on Chulin, called Dor Revi'i, has some radical things in there, like natural morality sometimes overrides halacha, and all types of wonderful things that I can't imagine the Chatam Sofer was so on board with. Yeah, of course, because the Dor Revi'i is passed around Gush all the time, right? Because Rav Amital loved the Dor Revi'i. This Dor Revi'i, and that line in the Dor Revi'i on natural morality. Yeah. Of course, because this was Rav Aharon's Machlokes with Rav Amital, where Rav Amital, the two founding Rosh Yeshiva of Gush, right, Rav Amital loved this passage in the Dor Revi'i, and Rav Aharon very much disliked that passage in the Dor Revi'i. But yes, it got passed around. Fine. But in his Hagdama of the Dor Revi'i, he says something really, really, really fascinating, radical, interesting about the Bavli. I'll say it for you outside, and then I'll read you the translation by Rabbi Dr. Ellman. I had mercy on you and gave you the English, and not the Hebrew. It wasn't originally written in Hebrew, in English. So, he says as follows. I'll say it outside first. Oral law, by definition, is oral and flexible. Written law is not flexible. Yes, concretized. Okay, but let me I'm going to spell it out for you, okay? So he says, okay. He says, here's the problem. The benefit of oral law is it's flexible. What's the downside of oral law? Yes, but that's not its downside. What's the downside of change?
It's hard to remember.
It is less stable, right? I mean, things which are flexible are less stable. Now, that's not usually a problem unless what?
I mean, if you have
If you have all the time in the world and you live a calm life, right, and have the time to think and change and improve society, flexibility is a great thing. When is flexibility not a good thing? When you don't have all the time in your world and you know life is tumultuous and you're being persecuted and things like that, because things that are flexible are hard to be passed on in the same way if you don't have all the time in the world, right? We all know this.
Wait.
Rami, one second. Then he says, his next step is therefore as follows. When the Gemara says that Rebbe wrote down the Mishnah because he saw that Rabu Atzarot, that things were very bad for the Jewish people, it doesn't just mean that he wrote it down so that it'd be easier to remember. It's making a more radical claim, which is he was temporarily transforming Torah Sheba'al Peh into Torah Shebichtav and taking away its flexibility so that it could survive in Galut. But there was a cost. Because by transforming Torah Sheba'al Peh into Torah Shebichtav, what did he do? He gave it more staying power, but temporarily hamstrung it and made it less flexible. And the same thing happened with the Chatimat HaTalmud. Then he says two things which are very radical. So far, this is not so radical. Therefore, he says, however, that means that even when Chazal are A, objectively wrong, we temporarily have to follow them because at the moment the law is frozen in place. Example, when Chazal issued a halachic ruling based on mistaken science, the Dor Revi'i argues that now, even though we know that they're wrong and one day we will change it, temporarily we are bound by it because it is frozen in time. Point one. Point two. The Gemara in a few places says that when someone in the Gemara tried to paskin a halacha in regards to kadshim, with karbanot, the Gemara retorts and says, "Don't bother, hilchata l'mashicha. It is halacha that isn't relevant in terms of Mashiach." So Rabbi Glasner says, I don't understand. Doesn't the Gemara always talk about things that aren't relevant nowadays? Why? Right, there's a whole Seder Kachim. Why shouldn't we paskin? So what? So he says the following. He says, look, obviously we learn Torah. That's going to be relevant in time of Mashiach. The Gemara is just saying that there's no reason to paskin. Why not? It's more than that. Because when Mashiach comes and there isn't the trials and travails that forced us to freeze the Torah Sheba'al Peh by making it Torah Shebichtav, what is the first thing Mashiach is going to do once we have respite? Tear up the Gemara and return us to the period of Torah Sheba'al Peh. And therefore, what will happen to everything in the Gemara? It's going to be important the way the Rambam's important, the way the Rajba's important. Meaning, it's what important rabbis said in the past. It'll be part of the discussion, but will it be binding? No. And therefore, it's important to learn things that will be relevant by Mashiach, but it's never important to do what? Paskin it. Because? Exactly. So the answer to the question, why is the Gemara binding, according to him, is it's a temporary historical aberration. And in Achinami, it is very possible in time of Mashiach that our Judaism will not look like the Gemara, the Judaism of the Gemara, because once we have respite from the travails of Galut, we will go back to what history should have been, which is what the Rambam describes, that in principle you're always allowed to argue. And the fact that we can't is merely a historical aberration.
Why is that controversial?
Okay, you don't think it's controversial. When I say it to Ravi, I get two responses. I get the people who say, oh my God, I can't believe anyone ever said that. And then that subdivides into, I can't believe anyone ever said it, I hate it, or I can't believe anyone ever said that, I love it. And then there's people like Rami. I found this in many shiurim I've given, where there's always the people who say, sounds fine to me, right? I don't know. I really don't know what generates it. Okay, fine. I shouldn't put value judgments of it and say controversial or not. It's definitely controversial in the sense that there are definitely people who look at this and say, okay, let me put it this way. What do you think the Chazon Ish's reaction would have been if you read the Dor Ravi'i? Rami, what do you think the Chazon Ish, who said the reason we listen to Gemara is because they have objectively more access to truth. What do you think his reaction is to someone who say, F, until we tear it up?
Oh,
right?
No,
that's not what he's saying.
What?
That's not what he thinks. Right? Okay. Let's read the Dor Ravi'i and then we'll finish the right man is ready to start in like 4 minutes. I still have time. So he says, whoever has regard for this truth, for the truth, will conclude that the reason the proper interpretation of the Torah was transmitted orally and forbidden to be written down was not to make the Torah unchanging and not to tie the hands of the sages of every generation from interpreting scripture according to their understanding. Only in this way can the eternity of Torah be understood properly, for the changes in the generations and their opinions, situation, material and moral condition requires changes in their laws, decrees, and improvements. Rather, the truth is that this issues from the wonderful wisdom and profound insight of the Torah, which teaches that the interpretation of Torah must be given over to the sages of each generation in order that the Torah remain a living force with the nation, developing with it, and that indeed is its eternity. Written Torah can be called truth because it is absolutely true. The oral Torah, its interpretation, however, is not called absolute truth, but rather conventional truth, which depends on the judges in your days, i.e. based on the agreement of the sages. Only that which the sages of the generation agree upon is true in this sense. When they contradict that which was accepted as true until then, their new interpretation becomes the true one for their generation. When the temple is rebuilt speedily in our times, and the children return to their boundary, and the crown is returned to its former condition in that the oral Torah will be transmitted orally, and it will be forbidden to write it down, then the sages of each generation will have the right to interpret the Torah according to their own understanding without reference to the interpretations of their predecessors. For the oral Torah will not have been written down in an iron pen to be unchanging. But from the time that Rabbeinu HaKadosh and the sages of the generation uprooted the prohibition of writing down matters hitherto transmitted orally, it is obvious that it is forbidden to us to dispute what generations before us have set down in writing in order to remain authoritative for many days. The intent of permitting the writing down of oral traditions was to prevent later generations from disputing the views of their predecessors. Only in this way may we understand the great controversy surrounding the permissibility of writing oral traditions, to the point that the sages of the Talmud said that whoever writes down halachot is one who burns them. But they held that it is better to uproot part of the Torah than the Torah to be forgotten by Israel. Which means that according to him, the answer to why they accept the Babli is, we temporarily, for him, I think the key word is stability. The only reason we accept the Babli is temporarily, because we need stability until we have a stable government. Religious government can therefore afford lack of stability in Torah interpretation. Meaning, as long as our situation, Galut, is unstable, the Torah has to be stabilized. But that's a historical aberration that will be undone in the time of Mashiach. Right? That is his answer. Okay? So we've seen variations on acceptance, formal acceptance, objective recognition of truth, descriptive recognition of more knowledge, some combination, right? The Meiri's tantalizing possibility, which is maybe we didn't really fully accept it, right? We only said we did or something like that, which is what he thinks happened in the Gemara to the Mishnah, but who knows afterwards. And then the Dor Ravi'i, which is temporarily the Gemara is considered Tar Shebechtav for stability purposes, but maybe one day we will in fact go back to re-examining the very interpretation of the Torah in the Gemara. Yes? Okay. Just give me a second. I will just note that what we didn't get to here, so we'll have to finish up next time, which is all of this is only to explain Mishnah Gemara, but there is a little bit left, which is Bavli versus Yerushalmi, right, which we haven't done. So let me just throw it out to you. We can either, let's say, spend half of the next year doing that, and then Sunday. Or I'll tell you, the rest of the sources here are descriptions of why precedence is important in general, not just the Gemara. The other possibility, which maybe will interest you, you guys tell me, something that I've been looking into over Ben Azmanim is an interesting question of what did the Rambam think he was doing when he wrote Mishneh Torah? Basically, did he think that he was just writing a very helpful code, or was he actually attempting to create another text which would carry the authority of the Rambam, of the Gemara, that couldn't be argued upon? Which I think sort of expands on our question, which is, well, if it's just about acceptance or something, could in theory that have happened post-Talmud also? Right? Well, yeah, Shulchan Aruch is the next stage, but before that it was the Rambam. So if you want, we can try to, like, put all of that in the next year, and I can give you, Makar, what we cover, what we don't. Maybe I'll print that out for you, we'll see what we do, and then we'll do that next time. I think this is an important topic to really get sort of to the bottom of. Yeah. Okay, go to Rabbi Man, fine.